The following message was delivered on Sunday morning, May 13, 2001, in the Adult Sunday School class at the Trinity Baptist Church in Montville, New Jersey.
Now, as we come again this morning to our survey of the Old Testament, we find ourselves in the latter portion of the reign of Israel's second king, David. In our previous study, we surveyed that 130-year period covered by the books of 1 and 2 Samuel. That period beginning with the priest Eli at the tabernacle in Shiloh, just before the birth of Samuel, then through the reign of Saul and ending late in the reign of David. David reigned 7.5 years over the tribe of Judah in Hebron, and now David has been reigning 30-plus years over all Israel in Jerusalem. It is at this point that 2 Samuel abruptly ends. And it is also at this point that 1 Kings begins. Look with me at 1 Kings chapter 1 and verse 1. 1 Kings 1:1. The book begins, "Now King David was old and stricken in years." So 1 Kings, you see, begins exactly where 2 Samuel leaves off. That being the case, in our attempt to survey the Old Testament chronologically, the book of Kings, 1 and 2 Kings being one continuous narrative in the original Hebrew Old Testament, the book of Kings then is our next book in chronological order. Kings begins around 970 B.C., just before the death of David, just before the beginning of the reign of his son Solomon. It ends 400 years later, sometime around or shortly after 586 B.C., after Jerusalem has fallen to the Babylonians and most of the children of Israel have been taken off into Babylonian captivity. That being the case, it is most likely that the book of Kings was written as a continuation of the historical record begun in the book of Samuel, and most likely recorded for the benefit of the Israelites in Babylonian captivity. There's also another Old Testament historical book which covers the same time frame that is covered in the book of Kings, and that is the book of Chronicles. Chronicles is the last book in the Hebrew Old Testament. Actually, Chronicles covers a longer period than does the book of Kings. If we count the first 9 chapters in the book of Chronicles, the first 9 chapters of genealogies, then Chronicles begins all the way back with Adam. But as far as the historical narrative is concerned, Chronicles begins in chapter 10 with the death of King Saul around 1010 B.C. And Chronicles ends around 550 B.C. after the Babylonian captivity is over and after the Persian king Cyrus makes a decree that the temple in Jerusalem should be rebuilt and that the Jews can go back home. So the beginning of the book of Chronicles is earlier than the beginning of the book of Kings, and it ends after the record of the book of Kings ends, ending shortly after the termination of the Babylonian captivity. That being the case, it is most likely that the book of Chronicles was written for the instruction of the Israelites who have now returned to Israel. They have returned from the Assyrian captivity of the northern kingdom and the Babylonian captivity of the southern kingdom. Now, since the historical material covered in the book of Kings is also found in the book of Chronicles, and since much of the material recorded in the book of Samuel is also found in the book of Chronicles, the most helpful way to look at these 3 historical records is to look at a harmony of the 3, very much like we would look at a harmony of the first 3 Gospels in the New Testament, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. They cover very much the same material. They cover the same time frame. So the best way to look at that material, if we want a better understanding of what the narrative is like is not to look at the individual books separately, but a more accurate picture of the history that they contain is found by seeking to harmonize them into one continuous narrative. That is very much the way that it would be good to look at Samuel, Kings, and Chronicles. Now, the difficulty with that approach, at least for the purposes of this class, is that it is somewhat complicated, and if done right, would take more time than we have to spend. Now, I am certain that most of you have noticed that we have been covering this survey in a rather speedy fashion. Now, the reason for that is that I am trying to finish this material by sometime mid to late summer, so that's why we are hurrying. I would much prefer to spend more time on each book, but that is simply not possible. Now, since we have already looked at the material recorded in the book of Samuel, what I propose to do this morning is to seek to work through a harmony of the material found in Kings and Chronicles, simply showing as we go where the material found in the book of Samuel fits in. For you who want to get a more clear picture of what is contained in these three historical narratives, these three historical records, I would recommend to you a book titled A Harmony of Samuel, Kings, and Chronicles by William Crockett, an excellent resource for seeking to harmonize these three Old Testament historical narratives. Now, even though we will be working through our survey of these books in a more surface way than I would like, when we come to the prophetical books in a couple of weeks, I will at that time be coming back to especially Kings and Chronicles and seeking to fit the various prophets into the time frame of the kings of both Israel and Judah, which material we will look at this morning, though, in a very surface way. Now, this morning, instead of writing an outline on the board, an outline of this harmony of Kings and Chronicles, which would be much more complicated than would fit on this small board, for our study this morning, I have drawn a timeline which hopefully will help us to see how these three historical narratives fit together. As I mentioned before, the book of Chronicles, that is, after the first nine chapters of the genealogies, which go all the way back to Adam, the book of Chronicles begins in chapter 10 with the death of Saul and the beginning of the reign of David, and goes all the way through the time when Israel, at least it is decreed by Cyrus, that Israel can return from Babylonian captivity sometime around 550 B.C. As we saw last week, Samuel begins around 1100 B.C. With the ministry of Eli, the birth of Samuel, then Saul, and ends late in the reign of David around 970 B.C. The book of Kings then begins at that point, late in the reign of David, and goes all the way to the time where Israel is taken into Babylonian captivity, a departure which came in three stages, the last one ending in 586 B.C. Now, maybe this timeline will help us now as we seek to harmonize the material, especially the material in Kings and Chronicles. When the printed outline is available at the end of our study, that outline of this portion will be more detailed than I would be able to put on the board this morning. Now, as we come to survey these historical narratives of Kings and Chronicles, seeking to do a survey of a harmony of these two, the first thing we find, as I've already mentioned, is the nine chapters of genealogies in 1 Chronicles. In chapter 1, beginning with Adam, we find the genealogies of the patriarchs. In chapters 2 through 9 of 1 Chronicles, we then find the genealogies of the 12 tribes of Israel. Remember, Chronicles is most likely being written for those Israelites who have been in Babylonian captivity, are now allowed to come back home most of whom would not have been very familiar with the history of their own land, because for 70 years their nation has been out of Israel and in captivity. So the writer of Chronicles begins all the way back with Adam and brings them basically up to date as to who they are as far as their genealogies are concerned. Then if we were seeking to harmonize the books of Kings, Chronicles, and Samuel, here is where all of 1 Samuel would fit. As you can see on the board, the priest Eli, the life and ministry of Samuel, the reign of Saul. And that is so because the first historical account in either Kings or Chronicles is found in 1 Chronicles chapter 10, and that is the account of the death of Saul. So a major portion then of Samuel would come at this point after the genealogies in 1 Chronicles if we were seeking to harmonize that. Then back to the first four chapters of 2 Samuel after the death of Saul. David moves from Ziklag to Hebron. He reigns in Hebron 7.5 years over the tribe of Judah, an account which is not found in either Kings or Chronicles. But then in 1 Chronicles 11, David is made king over all Israel and moves up to Jerusalem. And for the remainder of 1 Chronicles, we have an account of the reign of David in Jerusalem, a record which we have already looked at in 2 Samuel last week. The remainder of 1 Chronicles covers the wars of David, that period of rest when the Ark of the Covenant is brought up from Kiriath Yaharim to Jerusalem, that period of family troubles where Amnon rapes his sister Tamar, Absalom kills Amnon, the rebellion of Absalom. To the end of 2 Samuel, you find most of that material covered in the book of 1 Chronicles, at least up to the end of 1 Chronicles chapter 21. Now, for new material that we did not see in the book of Samuel, turn with me to 1 Chronicles chapter 22. 1 Chronicles chapter 22. In 1 Chronicles 22 through 29, we find a record of the final days of David. Back in 2 Samuel chapter 7, the time of the institution of the Davidic covenant, David was told by the prophet Nathan that his request to build a house for God had been denied by God, but that this house for God would be built by his son Solomon. Now here in 1 Chronicles 22, we find a record of David charging Solomon to build God's temple and commanding the princes of Israel to help Solomon in this endeavor. In 1 Chronicles 23 through 27, David makes sure that the priests and the Levites who are to serve in the temple are in order. He also makes sure that there is some order to the civil authorities. In 1 Chronicles 28, he calls together all of his officers and again, in their presence, charges Solomon to build the temple in Jerusalem. And it is somewhere about this time that the account of 1 Kings chapter 1 should be inserted. At this point, David is an old man. It seems clear that he will soon die. His son Adonijah seeks to set himself up as the king in David's stead, as the next king. Nathan the prophet hears what Adonijah is seeking to do, and he goes to Solomon's mother, Bathsheba. The two of them, that is, Nathan and Bathsheba, then approach David about this matter, and David stops this coup of Adonijah by sending Zadok the priest to anoint Solomon as king over Israel. So that portion of 1 Kings chapter 1 should be inserted here at the end of 1 Chronicles in order to get a harmony of this of this narrative. Now back to the final chapter of 1 Chronicles. David calls upon the leaders of Israel to contribute to the building of the temple as he had done. And there it is listed, all of the worldly goods that David had contributed, and it is quite a sum. And according to verse 9 of 1 Chronicles, the final chapter of 1 Chronicles, they offered willingly. Beginning in verse 10, David praises God for their willingness to give. And 1 Chronicles ends with Solomon being made king in Jerusalem. Now, as we come to the reign of Solomon, David, now having died at the end of 1 Chronicles, as we come to the reign of Solomon, we find that one of the first things that Solomon does is to remove those who have rebelled against his father and against him. Beginning in 1 Kings 2 and verse 13. And you will notice we are jumping back and forth. Remember, what we're seeking to do is harmonize Kings and Chronicles. So we will be jumping back and forth, although in a few moments we will settle down and use the book of Kings as our guide. In 1 Kings 2 and verse 13, we find Solomon dealing with his brother Adonijah. Remember, Adonijah has sought to set himself up as the next king in Israel instead of Solomon, doing this while David was still alive. Now, his brother Adonijah, now that David is gone, tries it again. And he tries it again by going to Solomon's mother Bathsheba and asking that he would have the privilege of taking Abishag the Shunammite to be his wife. Now, Abishag the Shunammite was an Israelite beauty queen. She was very beautiful, we are told, who back in 1 Kings chapter 1 was chosen among the women of Israel to keep David warm in his old age. We are also told that is all that happened. This move, then, by Adonijah to get the concubine of David and to make her his wife was understood by Solomon as an attempt to usurp the throne by taking to himself one of David's concubines. That was the signal that he was giving. So Solomon dealt with that by ordering his brother Adonijah to be killed. Beginning in 1 Kings 2 and verse 28, the military general Joab is also killed by Solomon because of his rebellious actions against David and against Solomon himself. For Joab tried to help Adonijah to usurp the throne from Solomon. Beginning in 1 Kings 2:36, Solomon kills the man Shimei. Remember, that is the man who cursed David as David was fleeing from Jerusalem, fleeing from Absalom. So after David is gone, even though David has promised that he will not take Shimei's life, he said nothing about his son taking Shimei's life, so Solomon takes care of that for him. Also in the early days of Solomon's reign is that familiar account beginning in 1 Kings chapter 3 and verse 4. Please look with me at 1 Kings chapter 3. 1 Kings 3 and verse 4. And the king, this is Solomon, and the king went to Gibeon to sacrifice there. Now the tabernacle had been moved from Shiloh to Gibeon. For that was the great high place. 1,000 burnt offerings did Solomon offer upon that altar. In Gibeon, Jehovah appeared to Solomon in a dream by night, and God said, "Ask what I shall give you." And Solomon said, "You have shown unto your servant David my father great loving kindness, according as he walked before you in truth and in righteousness and in uprightness of heart with you. And you have kept for him this great loving kindness, that you have given him a son to sit on his throne as it is this day. And now, O Jehovah my God, you have made your servant king instead of David my father, and I am but a little child. I know not how to go out or to come in. And your servant is in the midst of your people, which you have chosen, a great people, that cannot be numbered nor counted for multitude. Give your servant therefore an understanding heart to judge your people, that I may discern between good and evil. For who is able to judge this your great people? And the speech pleased the Lord that Solomon had asked this thing. And God said unto him, because you have asked this thing, and have not asked for yourself long life, neither have asked riches for yourself, nor have asked the life of your enemies, but have asked for yourself understanding to discern justice. Behold, I have done according to your word. Behold, I have given you a wise and understanding heart, so that there has been none like you before you, neither after you shall any arise like unto you. And I have also given you that which you have not asked, both riches and honor, so that there shall not be any among the kings like unto you all your days. And if you will walk in my ways, to keep my statutes and my commandments, as your father David did walk, then I will lengthen your days. And then in the remainder of 1 Kings chapter 3, that wisdom from God is displayed in Solomon's handling the dispute between the two harlots concerning which one was the mother of the child. And you will remember that story. But now as we move into 1 Kings 4 and going all the way through 1 Kings chapter 10, also in 2 Chronicles 2 through 9, we find some of the details of the glory of Solomon's reign. In 1 Kings 5, we find a record of Solomon's league with King Hiram of Tyre and preparations for the building of the temple. 1 Kings 6, we find the actual building of the temple. In 1 Kings 7, the building of Solomon's house and also some of the vessels for the temple. Then in 1 Kings 8, Solomon's dedication of the temple. The Ark of the Covenant is moved up from the city of David up to the Temple Mount where the temple is built. And the remainder of that chapter is Solomon's prayer of dedication and the dedicatory sacrifices. According to 1 Kings 8, verse 63, a sacrifice on that day of 22,000 oxen and 120,000 sheep. Now just imagine the sight, if you would. All of those dead animals, but they were being sacrificed to God at the dedication of the temple. And then in 1 Kings 9, God again appears to Solomon. Notice in 1 Kings 9 in verse 1. And it came to pass when Solomon had finished the building of the house of Jehovah and the king's house, and all Solomon's desire which he was pleased to do, that Jehovah appeared to Solomon the second time, as he had appeared unto him at Gibeon. And Jehovah said unto him, I have heard your prayer and your supplication that you have made before me. I have hallowed, that is, I have set apart this house which you have built, to put my name there forever, and mine eyes and my heart shall be there perpetually. But as for you, now notice the echo here, of Leviticus 26, we keep hearing this coming up over and over and over again. If you will walk before me, as David your father walked, in integrity of heart and in uprightness, to do according to all that I have commanded you, and will keep my statutes and mine ordinances, then I will establish the throne of your kingdom over Israel forever, according as I promised to David your father, saying, there shall not fail you a man upon the throne of Israel. But if you shall turn away from following me, you or your children, and not keep my commandments and my statutes which I have set before you, but shall go and serve other gods and worship them, then will I. And God goes on to list the things that he will do if Solomon or any of Solomon's descendants turn away from following God. That is an echo of Leviticus 26. Remember the curses and the blessings that God communicated to the children of Israel through Moses, commanded them when they arrived into the promised land, part of the nation, a certain number of tribes should stand upon Mount Gerizim and recite the blessings. The other portion of the nation stand upon Mount Ebal there at Shechem and quote the curses. Here is an echo of that. If you will obey me, then I will. If you will not obey me, then I will. Then finally, this section describing the glory of Solomon's reign, we find in 1 Kings chapter 10, the Queen of Sheba, hearing of Solomon's wisdom, hearing of Solomon's riches, comes for a visit. Now, when we come to 1 Kings 11, we find a brief record of the end of Solomon's reign. By now, Solomon has 700 wives and 300 concubines. My Mother's Day present to you is that I will make no comment about that. 1 Kings 11:2 makes it clear that this was a violation of the law of God. Notice in 1 Kings 11, beginning in verse 1. Now King Solomon loved many foreign women, together with the daughter of Pharaoh, women of the Moabites, the Ammonites, Edomites, Sidonians, and Hittites, of the nations concerning which Jehovah said unto the children of Israel, you shall not go among them, neither shall they come among you, for surely they will turn away your heart after their gods. Solomon clave unto these in love. And what God said not to do, Solomon did. And notice what happened. Verse 4. For it came to pass when Solomon was old that his wives turned away his heart after other gods. And his heart was not perfect with Jehovah his God as with the heart of David his father. For Solomon went after Ashtaroth, the goddess of the Sidonians, and after Milcom, the abomination of the Ammonites. And Solomon did that which was evil in the sight of Jehovah, and went not fully after Jehovah as did David his father. Then did Solomon build a high place for Chemosh, the abomination of Moab, in the mount that is before Jerusalem, and for Molech, the abomination of the children of Ammon. And so did he for all his foreign wives who burnt incense and sacrificed unto their gods. Just what God said an unequal yoke with unbelievers would do happened to Solomon. Verse 9, and Jehovah was angry with Solomon because his heart was turned away from Jehovah, the God of Israel, who had appeared unto him twice and had commanded him concerning this thing, that he should not go after other gods, but he kept not that which Jehovah commanded. Therefore Jehovah said unto Solomon, forasmuch as this is done of you, and you have not kept my commandment, and are my covenant and my statutes which I have commanded you, I will surely rend the kingdom from you and will give it to your servant. And then the remainder of that chapter is God raising up adversaries against Solomon. Remember Leviticus 26? Remember what God has just said to Solomon when he appeared to him the second time? If you obey me, if you serve me, if you keep my commandments, I will bless you. But if you do not, here we have a record of what happens when Solomon did not. God raising up adversaries against him. One was Hadad the Edomite. And one who will soon play a major role in Israel was Jeroboam, the son of Nebat. And if you've read much in Kings and Chronicles, you find that name coming up over and over and over again, because it says that the kings of Israel did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord. They did that which they committed the sins of Jeroboam the son of Nebat. That's said over and over and over again. And here we meet this man. Notice what is said of him here in 1 Kings 11 and verse 29. And it came to pass at that time, when Jeroboam went out of Jerusalem, that the prophet Ahijah the Shilonite found him in the way. Now Ahijah had clad himself with a new garment, and they two were alone in the field. And Ahijah laid hold of the new garment that was on him and rent it, that is, tore it in 12 pieces. And he said to Jeroboam, "You take 10 pieces. For thus says Jehovah the God of Israel, Behold, I will rend the kingdom out of the hand of Solomon and will give 10 tribes to you. But he shall have one tribe for my servant David's sake and for Jerusalem's sake, the city which I have chosen out of all the tribes of Israel. Because that they have forsaken me and have worshipped Ashtaroth, the goddess of the Sidonians, Chemosh, the god of Moab, Milcom, the god of the children of Ammon, and they have not walked in my ways to do that which is right in my eyes, and to keep my statutes and my ordinances as did David his father. Howbeit, I will not take the whole kingdom out of his hand, but I will make him prince all the days of his life for David my servant's sake, whom I chose, who kept my commandments and my statutes. But I will take the kingdom out of his son's hand and will give it unto you, even 10 tribes. And unto his son will I give one tribe, that David my servant may have a lamp always before me in Jerusalem, the city which I have chosen me to put my name there. And I will take you, and you shall reign according to all that your soul desires, and shall be king over Israel." Now listen to what God says to Jeroboam. Here again, an echo of Leviticus 26. "And it shall be, if you will hearken unto all that I command you, and will walk in my ways and do that which is right in my eyes, to keep my statutes and my commandments as David my servant did, that I will be with you and will build you a sure house as I built for David, and will give Israel unto you. And I will for this afflict the seed of David, but not forever." Solomon sought therefore to kill Jeroboam. But Jeroboam arose and fled unto Egypt, unto Shishak, king of Egypt, and was in Egypt until the death of Solomon. Here is the division of Israel into the northern and the southern kingdoms, a division that lasted to the time of the Assyrian captivity of the northern kingdom some 200 years later. Now, it hasn't happened yet, but it has been prophesied that the land would be divided just north of the Dead Sea. These 10 tribes would go to Jeroboam, and this one tribe, including Benjamin, so in reality two tribes, would go to Solomon's son, Rehoboam. Now, the next period in Kings and Chronicles is this time of the divided kingdom. That time when a descendant of David is upon the throne in the southern kingdom of Judah at Jerusalem, while someone other than a descendant of David is upon the throne in the northern kingdom of Israel. Beginning in 1 Kings 12 and verse 1, "After the death of Solomon, Solomon's son Rehoboam reigns in Solomon's place." In 1 Kings 12 and verse 4, "The people of Israel come to Rehoboam, and they say to him, 'Your father made our yoke grievous,'" speaking of Solomon. "Now therefore, make the grievous service of your father and his heavy yoke which he put upon us lighter, and we will serve you." So here the Israelites, those in the northern kingdom — the kingdom hasn't been divided yet — but they come to Rehoboam and they say to him, you make our burden lighter and we will serve you. Well, Rehoboam asked them to give him 3 days to think about this proposal. And he sought counsel from the older men who had been the counselors of his father Solomon, and they told him to agree with the proposal, but he did not take their counsel. Instead, he took the counsel of the young men who had grown up with him. They told him to say to the people, 1 Kings 12 and verse 10, "These young men told him to respond to the people, 'My little finger is thicker than my father's loins. And now, whereas my father did lade you with a heavy yoke, I will add to your yoke. My father chastened you with whips, but I will chasten you with scorpions.'" You think it was tough under my father's rule? You haven't seen anything yet. Now notice down in verse 15, why did Rehoboam do this thing? Why did he ignore the counsel of the wiser, older counselors and follow the counsel of his young friends? 1 Kings 12 and verse 15. So the king hearkened not unto the people, for it was a thing brought about of Jehovah, that he might establish his word, which Jehovah spake by Ahijah the Shilonite to Jeroboam the son of Nebat. As judgment for Solomon's sins of being unequally yoked together with his unconverted wives, God has promised to take the northern 10 tribes out of the hands of the house of David. This has been communicated to Jeroboam by Ahijah the prophet. Now, in order to make this prophecy come to pass, God works in the heart of Solomon's son Rehoboam and causes him to reject good counsel and embrace the poor counsel of his young friends, so that the northern kingdom of Israel would rebel against Rehoboam and turn to Jeroboam to rule over them. So God was working here to accomplish what he had already prophesied to Jeroboam through the prophet. And that is exactly what happened. The northern tribes made Jeroboam their king in Shechem. So the northern tribes, from about the north end of the Dead Sea upward, made Jeroboam their king here in Shechem. The Davidic king Rehoboam ruled in the south in Jerusalem. Jeroboam ruled in the north in Shechem. In 1 Kings 12, 21, when Rehoboam returned to Jerusalem, he gathered the armies of Judah and Benjamin to go fight against his brothers in the north to try to reunite the nation. Now, from this point onward, the term Israel is a designation not of the entire land, but the term Israel is a designation for the northern kingdom. The term Judah is a designation for the southern kingdom. So Rehoboam goes back to his capital city in Judah. He gathers together the armies of Judah and Benjamin to go fight against his brethren in Israel. But God sends a prophet, Shimei, to command Rehoboam not to go up and fight against Israel. But now, beginning in verse 26 of 1 Kings chapter 12, we find a record of a very significant event. 1 Kings 12 and verse 26. And Jeroboam said in his heart, this is the king in Israel in the north, now will the kingdom return to the house of David. If this people go up to offer sacrifices in the house of Jehovah at Jerusalem, then will the heart of this people turn again unto their Lord, even unto Rehoboam, king of Judah. And they will kill me, and return to Rehoboam, king of Judah. Whereupon the king, this is Jeroboam, took counsel, and made two calves of gold. And he said unto them, it is too much for you to go up to Jerusalem. Behold your gods, pointing to the calves. Behold your gods, O Israel, which brought you up out of the land of Egypt. And he set the one in Bethel, and the other he put in Dan. So Jeroboam, after the division of the kingdom, is made king in Shechem. He's fearful that the people of the north will do what God has commanded and go down to Jerusalem to worship at the temple. That's what they're supposed to do. So to try to prevent that, for he fears if they go down to worship at the temple, their hearts will be given to the king in the south, Rehoboam, and they will kill him and take the kingdom from him. So he makes two golden calves. He puts one in Bethel. He puts the other up in Dan, which is here. And these are supposed to be the substitutes for the worship of God in Jerusalem, in order to hold on to the kingdom which God has given him. Fearing that the people will go down to Jerusalem to worship, end up turning to Rehoboam, in order to hold on to that kingdom, he places these golden calves in Dan and Bethel. In 1 Kings 13, God sends a prophet to address this wickedness of Jeroboam. he prophesies that God will raise up a Davidic king by the name of Josiah, that this Davidic king will burn the bones of the golden calf worship priests upon the altar at Bethel. Now, the thing you need to know about this is that Josiah is a king that will not be born for 300 years. And here he is prophesied by name 300 years before his birth. In 1 Kings 14, Jeroboam's son becomes ill. And Jeroboam, remember, is the king in the north. He sends his wife in disguise to seek for this prophet Ahijah at Shiloh. This is the prophet who initially was sent by God to tell him that the 10 tribes would be given to him. Well, because God revealed it to Ahijah, he recognizes Jeroboam's wife. And he tells Jeroboam's wife that God has said that every male child in his family will be cut off, beginning with this sick child that she has come to inquire about. In addition to that, the prophet tells her that God will raise up a king over Israel who will completely wipe out the house of Jeroboam. In addition to that, because of the sin of Jeroboam, it is here prophesied that Israel would be taken into Assyrian captivity, something that will not happen for 190 years. Now, in 1 Kings 15 and 16, and in 2 Chronicles 14 through 16, we have a record of several relatively insignificant kings in Israel and Judah and their wars with one another. After Rehoboam in Judah was Abijam and then Asa. After Jeroboam the son of Nebat in Israel was Nadab and Baasha and Elah, then Zimri, then Omri. All of the kings in the north, and I quote, did that which was evil in the sight of Jehovah. Every one of them up to this point, walking in the ways of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who set up the golden calves in Bethel and in Dan. Up to this point, King Asa of Judah is the only one who has done right in the sight of God. But then in 1 Kings 16 and verse 29, Ahab, the son of Omri, comes to the throne in Israel. Now notice what is said of Ahab beginning in verse 29 of 1 Kings 16. And in the 38th year of Asa king of Judah began Ahab the son of Omri to reign over Israel. And Ahab the son of Omri reigned over Israel in Samaria 22 years. Now up to this point Israel has been ruled by Jeroboam from Shechem, then up in Tirzah, but now Omri and now his son Ahab are ruling from Samaria. Let's see if I can find it. Samaria. So they've moved, the capital in the north has moved to several different locations. Verse 30 of chapter 16. And Ahab the son of Omri did that which was evil in the sight of Jehovah above all that were before him. And it came to pass, as if it had been a light thing for him to walk in the sins of Jeroboam the son of Nebat. If that wasn't enough, that he took a wife, Jezebel, the daughter of Ethbaal, king of the Sidonians, and went and served Baal and worshipped him. And he reared up an altar for Baal in the house of Baal, which he built in Samaria, his capital city. And Ahab made the Asherah, and Ahab did yet more to provoke Jehovah, the God of Israel, to anger than all the kings of Israel that were before him. And as you can see from the first verse of the next chapter, it was in the days of Ahab that God raises up the prophet Elijah. As a response to Ahab's wickedness, in 1 Kings 17, through Elijah, God tells Ahab that there will be a drought in Israel. In the next chapter, in chapter 18, 3 years later, after there has been severe drought and famine, Elijah reappears. And we find in chapter 18 a record of Elijah's challenge to Jezebel's Baal prophets up on Mount Carmel. Mount Carmel is here. So Elijah has come back and he challenges the Baal prophets of Jezebel up on Mount Carmel. Elijah kills 400 prophets of Baal. Soon after that, God sends rain to break the 3-year drought. And Elijah then runs after Ahab to Jezreel. From Mount Carmel, he runs to Jezreel, seeking to catch up with Ahab. But then notice what happens in 1 Kings 19. 1 Kings 19 and verse 1. And Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done, and how he had slain all the prophets with the sword. Then Jezebel sent a messenger unto Elijah, saying, So let the gods do to me and more also, if I make not your life as the life of one of them, that is, I will kill you by tomorrow about this time. And when he saw that is Elijah, he arose and went for his life, and came to Beersheba, which belongs to Judah, and left his servant there. But he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness, and came and sat down under a juniper tree, and he requested for himself that he might die, and said, It is enough now, O Jehovah, take away my life. Verse 5. And he lay down and slept under the juniper tree, and behold, an angel touched him, and said unto him, Arise and eat. And he looked, and behold, there was at his head a cake baked on the coals, and a cruse of water. And he did eat and drink, and lay down again. And the angel of Jehovah came again the second time and touched him and said, Arise and eat, because the journey is too great for you. And he arose and did eat and drink and went in the strength of that food 40 days and 40 nights unto Horeb, the mount of God. And he came there unto a cave and lodged there. So Elijah has come back after 3 years of drought. He does battle with the prophets of Baal on Mount Carmel. He chases King Ahab to Jezreel. He gets word from Jezebel that she's going to kill him. He flees for his life all the way down to Beersheba, leaves his servant there, and flees again 40 days all the way to Mount Sinai, which is way off of that map. So he is really afraid, and he is making some good time, it appears. Then in 1 Kings 21, after his successful war with Syria, we have a record of Ahab's attempted acquisition of Naboth's vineyard back up in Jezreel. Apparently their capital was in Samaria, but they had some kind of other home in Jezreel. Now when Naboth, who was their neighbor, would not sell this vineyard to Ahab, as you know, Jezebel had Naboth killed. God again sends Elijah to address this situation. 1 Kings 21 and verse 19. Elijah says to Ahab, Thus says Jehovah, In the place where dogs licked the blood of Naboth, shall dogs lick your blood. Verse 21. Behold, I will bring evil upon you, and will utterly sweep you away, and will cut off from Ahab every man-child. Verse 22, And will make your house like the house of Jeroboam the son of Nebat. Verse 23, And of Jezebel also spake Jehovah, saying, The dog shall eat Jezebel by the rampart of Jezreel. Now the Davidic king at this point in time, that is the king down in Judah in the south, was Jehoshaphat. We are told in 2 Chronicles 17 that God was with Jehoshaphat because he walked in the first ways of his father David and sought not unto the Baalim. We are also told that Jehoshaphat sent out his princes and Levites to teach the law of God in Judah. As a result of that, 2 Chronicles 17 and verse 10, And the fear of Jehovah fell upon all the kingdoms of the lands that were round about Judah, so that they did not make war with Jehoshaphat. He is obeying God, he is serving God, and God is keeping his word. He's providing for him and he's protecting him. So Jehoshaphat was a good king, but he made two major errors. The first one is in 2 Chronicles 18 and verse 1. Now Jehoshaphat had riches and honor in abundance, but he joined affinity with Ahab. Now remember, Ahab is the king in the north. Jehoshaphat is the Davidic king in the south. So he makes an alliance with the wicked king in the north. His second error was permitting his son Jehoram to marry Athaliah, the daughter of Ahab. So he not only makes an alliance with this wicked king in the north, he also allows his son to marry his daughter. In 1 Kings 22, Jehoshaphat, against the counsel of the prophet Micaiah, joins Ahab in a war against Ramoth-Gilead. Ramoth-Gilead is over in this area. So there's an alliance between Jehoshaphat and Ahab. They go to war against Ramoth-Gilead in that battle. Ahab is killed. Jehoshaphat barely escapes with his own life, but he doesn't seem to have learned his lesson, because at the end of 1 Kings 22, he makes another alliance with Ahab's wicked son, Ahaziah. And as we come to 2 Kings, in chapter 2, God takes Elijah up to heaven in a chariot of fire, and Elisha becomes a prophet in his place. And from 2 Kings 2 through 2 Kings 9, we have a record of the ministry of Elisha, as with Elijah, mostly a ministry to the wicked kings of the northern kingdom of Israel. 2 Kings 3, we find him being called upon to give a word from God concerning Israel's king Jehoram and his alliance with, guess who, Judah's king Jehoshaphat against the Moabites. Jehoshaphat still has not learned the lesson that God will not prosper the unequal yokes which God has forbidden. In 2 Kings 4, Elisha raises the son of the Shunammite woman. In 2 Kings 5, he heals the Syrian captain Naaman of his leprosy. In 2 Kings 6, the account of the miracle of the floating axe head. In 2 Kings 7, Elisha's involvement in the Syrian siege of the capital of the northern kingdom, Samaria. And then in 2 Kings 9, Elisha anoints Jehu to be king in Israel, king of the northern kingdom. And he commands Jehu to be God's instrument to bring to pass the promised judgment upon the house of Ahab, which Elijah had promised back in 1 Kings 21. Now notice in 2 Kings 9 and verse 30 how this promise was fulfilled. 2 Kings 9 and verse 30. And when Jehu was come to Jezreel, Jezebel heard of it, and she painted her eyes and attired her head and looked out at the window. And as Jehu entered in at the gate, he said, or she said, "Is it peace?" Verse 32. And he lifted up his face to the window and said, "Who is on my side? Who?" And there looked out to him two or three eunuchs. And he said, "Throw her down." So they threw her down, and some of her blood was sprinkled on the wall and on the horses, and he trod her underfoot. And when he was come in, he did eat and drink, and he said, "See now to this cursed woman and bury her, for she is the king's daughter." And they went to bury her. But they found no more of her than the skull and the feet and the palms of her hands. Wherefore they came back and told him. And he said, "This is the word of Jehovah which he spake by his servant Elijah the Tishbite, saying, In the portion of Jezreel shall the dogs eat the flesh of Jezebel." Then in 2 Kings chapter 10, Jehu finishes the job by having 70 of Ahab's sons killed, killing the priests and the worshippers of Baal. In the words of 2 Kings 10 and verse 28, Jehu destroyed Baal out of Israel. He did what God had commanded. He was God's instrument to wipe out the house of Ahab and the influence of the house of Ahab as far as Baal worship was concerned. Now, when we come to 2 Kings 11, we meet the second major error which King Jehoshaphat of Judah had made. In addition to making alliances with Ahab and two of his sons who later became king in Israel, in addition to that, Jehoshaphat allowed his son Jehoram to marry Ahab's daughter Athaliah. Now, Athaliah and Jehoram had a son, Ahaziah. Ahaziah became king after his father Jehoram died, but he reigned only 1 year. In 2 Kings 11, when Athaliah sees that her son, King Ahaziah, is dead, in order to take the throne of Judah, remember this is Ahab's daughter, in order to take the throne of Judah for herself, she kills all of her male grandchildren. All of those who would be in line for the throne, she attempts to kill. One of her grandchildren, Joash, is rescued by Jehoiada, the priest, and is hidden in the temple, that one place where this Baal-worshipping woman would not go. After Athaliah rules Judah for 6 years, Joash then is brought out of hiding, anointed king at 7 years old, at which point Athaliah is killed. From here, the records of the kings of the northern kingdom of Israel and the southern kingdom of Judah are relatively uneventful. The northern kings, Jehoahaz, Jehoash, Jeroboam II, Menachem, Pekahiah, Pekah, Hoshea, all of them did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord. In the southern kingdom of Judah, after wicked Athaliah, the Davidic kings, Joash, Amaziah, Uzziah, Jotham, and Ahaz, all did that which was right in the sight of the Lord. And because of the wickedness in the north, in 722 B.C., in 2 Kings 17, the northern kingdom of Israel is defeated by the Assyrians and is taken off into Assyrian captivity. Notice in 2 Kings 17 in verse 6. In the ninth year of Hoshea, that's the last king of the northern kingdom, the king of Assyria took Samaria, there's the capital of the northern kingdom, and carried Israel away unto Assyria and placed them in Halah and on the Habor, the river of Gozan, and in the cities of the Medes. And it was so because the children of Israel had sinned against Jehovah their God, who brought them out of the land of Egypt from under the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and had feared other gods, and walked in the statutes of the nations whom Jehovah cast out from before the children of Israel. So what the Assyrians did was transplant the inhabitants of the northern kingdom off into other lands that they had conquered, and they brought the inhabitants of those other lands that they had conquered to be the new inhabitants of this land that had been vacated by the inhabitants of the northern kingdom. Now, at the time that the northern kingdom was carried off into Assyrian captivity, Hezekiah was on the throne in Jerusalem. The Assyrians were not satisfied with conquering the northern kingdom of Israel. They wanted the southern kingdom of Judah as well. In 2 Kings 18 and 19, the Assyrian king Sennacherib takes most of the fortified cities of Judah and is now laying siege to Jerusalem. He almost has it all. Hezekiah, a godly king, seeks the mind of God through Isaiah the prophet, and he is told that King Sennacherib will not take Jerusalem. And of course, he was right. On one night, the angel of the Lord came and destroyed, killed 185,000 Assyrian soldiers. King Sennacherib then went back to Nineveh, his capital city, and was assassinated by his two sons. In 2 Kings 20 is that familiar account of Hezekiah being sick with a terminal illness. Isaiah tells him he is going to die. Hezekiah prays and God grants him 15 more years. And as a sign that God was answering his prayer, God caused the shadow on the sundial to go in the opposite direction to what it should. Then in 2 Kings 21, a record of the reign of Hezekiah's wicked son, Manasseh, the most wicked king in the southern kingdom. And also in that chapter, the reign of his wicked son, Amon. In chapters 22 and 23 of 2 Kings, the righteous king Josiah. Remember, the book of the law was found during the renovation of the temple during his reign. And there were great reforms under King Josiah, destroying all of the remaining implements of Baal worship, destroying all idols, breaking down houses of the Sodomites that were in the temple in Jerusalem. He also, as was foretold back in 1 Kings 13, burned the bones of the golden calf worship priests on the altar of Bethel. That was foretold, remember, 300 years before when he was called by name. He reestablished Jehovah worship. And it is said of him in 2 Kings 23:25, like unto him there was no king before him that turned to Jehovah with all his heart, neither after him arose there any like him. But in spite of the efforts of this righteous king, God was still determined to judge Judah because of the wickedness of Manasseh. And so in 2 Kings 24 and 25, we find a record of the final days of the southern kingdom of Judah, the kings of Judah during those final days, all of them doing that which was evil in the sight of the Lord. And we read of how Nebuchadnezzar, a king of Babylon, in 586 defeated Judah and carried most of the inhabitants off into Babylonian captivity. How he set up his puppet governor Gedaliah, who was 7 months later was killed by the Jews, and then all the remaining Jews, the poor in the land was all that was left. They fled to Egypt because of fear of the Babylonians. Now, for the most part, we have been working out of the book of Kings. But the book of Chronicles has more or less the same material. That is, except in the last chapter of Chronicles, apparently written following the 70 years of Babylonian captivity. And there in verses 22 and 23 of 2 Chronicles, chapter 36, we are told of the decree of Cyrus, the Persian king. The Persian king, the Medes and the Persians have now defeated the Babylonians. And we read there of the decree of the Persian king Cyrus to allow the Jews to go back home and the temple to be built. Well, that is a very quick survey of the history of Israel from the reign of David until the return from Babylonian captivity. Now, when we come back in our study next week, we will be backtracking to the time of David and Solomon and looking at the books of Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and Song of Solomon. And then we will get into the prophets. Again, backtracking and seeking to fit those prophets into their proper place in the history of Israel and Judah, that history that we have hurriedly gone over both last week and today. But for now, our time is gone, so let us pray. Our Father, we are again thankful for your mercies in helping us as we have hurriedly gone through this material. We ask that you would use this effort to help us to better understand the broad picture of what was happening in Israel in those days, so that when we come to the more detailed analysis of the prophets, that we will be able to better understand the climate in which they labored. We thank you, our Father, for this time, and we ask that you would use it for our good and for your glory. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.